It was back when I was in high school. It was a Saturday morning. My father came to me and said, "Hey, would you like to go with me to the hospital?" Now again, it was Saturday morning and I was in high school. I'm sure my father saw in my face this question of why in the world would I want to go to a hospital on Saturday morning. So he followed up by saying, "Lamar Sitton is in the hospital, and I thought he would really like to see you when I go visit him." My father was pastor of Signal Mountain Baptist Church, and often on Saturdays would visit either the hospitals or folks in their homes. And as he invited me to go see Mr. Sitton, it made a lot of sense because Mr. Sitton had been a chaperone for our youth group, often had accompanied us. A lot of rambunctious high school guys, and also when we were in middle school, took us on trips, especially to a place called Ridgecrest Baptist Conference Center. Some of you may remember back in those days when there was Sunday School Week and Youth Week and Music Week. And during Youth Week, Recreation Week, it was actually called, Mr. Sitton served as our male chaperone with Mike Anderson and Larry Wilson and Jimmy Cooley and Doug Allbritton and me and a few other guys all crammed into a room together for a whole week. We had far more fun, I'm sure, than we were supposed to have, but we also had these great memories of being with Mr. Sitton and having fun with him, singing with him, enjoying our time together, and really coming to respect him as one of our adult leaders. It turns out Mr. Sitton, as my father explained to me, was in the hospital and was pretty lonely. So my dad and I went to Park Ridge Hospital, went down, walked in the hospital room, and there was my youth leader, Mr. Sitton, this big, strong, gregarious guy, quietly sitting there in a hospital bed connected to all these tubes. And I'll never forget seeing his face when he looked up and saw my dad and me standing in the doorway and moving toward his bed. He lit up with this sense of excitement and deep appreciation. I'd never really seen this side of this strong, big guy before, and it made me realize as a high school kid that Mr. Sitton was really lonely. He was all by himself, and we were the connecting point, my dad and me, to this community of faith that meant so much to him and meant so much to us. We were sort of the sacred link, not only for the people at Signal Mountain Baptist Church, but also for this sense of faith and God's presence in that hospital room. Well, we are today not in hospitals. Most of us are thankfully fairly healthy at this point, but like Mr. Sitton, we are socially isolated in many cases. A lot of you in our conversations on the phone and in visits where we have been socially distant from one another, you've shared with me and you're sharing with your friends over the phone and over email and texting that you're pretty lonely and that all of us are sharing in kind of this sense of sadness during these challenging, difficult times. We're discovering together, like Mr. Sitton, how hard it is to be isolated from your friends and your community of faith and the sacred space that we share together every week, or sometimes for many of us, several times a week. What I'd like to do is share for the next few moments insights from isolation, specifically from the first chapter of Philippians. We've already heard read this morning four different sections from this very important letter to the church in Philippi. Philippians is important to us during this difficult time for many reasons. One of the main ones is it's known as one of the three or four prison epistles. Philippians is like Philemon and Colossians in that it definitely was written by Paul from prison, thus the name prison epistle or letter from prison. Ephesians sometimes is included in that list as a fourth prison epistle. So we've got three or four of these really important letters sent to either individuals or groups of individuals in a congregation from an isolated place where Paul is in prison, like us, socially distanced from those he cares about, from the churches that he has been nurtured by and has participated fully in. Paul is lonely. Paul is sad. Paul is experiencing many of the same kinds of difficulties, challenges, and emotions that we've all been feeling over these last few weeks. And like us, too, in these prison epistles, especially in Philippians, we really kind of get this sense of uncertainty about his social condition and what his future holds. The broader perspective in each of these prison epistles is that God is in control of the now and the future. And yet there still is this looming uncertainty about what tomorrow holds for us, for example. We hear every day new possibilities for, well, will we be set free in a couple of weeks? Is it going to be June? Is it going to be July? Might it be even 2021? So we have lots of questions, and those questions sort of exacerbate the feelings we already have of uncertainty and the challenges that we're facing in not being together. So insights from isolation, from Philippians, specifically for today, chapter 1. And I'd like to talk about the four G's that emerge out of this specific text in the first chapter of this prison epistle known as Philippians, the letter to the church in Philippi. Our first G starts right at the beginning, which Lottie read a few moments ago so beautifully. It starts with this greeting, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. The word grace is our first G, and it's going to be our second G. Grace to you. The word grace, several of you have shared with me in conversations over the last couple of weeks, specifically related to, I need to give myself more grace. This idea of allowing grace to be a part of my experience from me. We all are struggling with expecting maybe a little too much from ourselves right now, adjusting as many of us are to trying to learn how to adapt to being isolated as we are. And one of the insights in isolation that I think begins to become real for Paul in prison is this power of grace. He uses this word several times throughout this letter, as well as the letter to the Colossians. That is this idea of, well, I need to give myself a little grace for us, this first G. Self-owning the need for grace, maybe giving myself a little more space to be sad, to be frustrated, to figure out a little better how to deal with not being around the people that I care most about. Part of what Paul discovers in his own isolation is the fact that it is often in times of difficulty in isolation when we become most confronted with our need for increased spiritual depth. Our connection to God, sometimes in these difficult times, becomes far more accessible. And even though it's difficult, even though the challenges are very real, to take seriously the possibility that while we have fewer distractions, while we are less compulsive about moving and going and being and doing, perhaps these are times where giving ourselves grace allows for God's movement in our hearts and minds to become more real. It may not be evident in the now, but hopefully in the coming weeks and months, we can look back on this time and say, you know, that time of isolation for me when I was socially distanced from the people I cared most about was really a rich time of spiritual growth and connectivity to God's Spirit and God's movement in my heart and in my mind. So our first G is simply grace to me. The second G is grace to you, grace to those around us, in the sense that all of us are struggling, all of us are wrestling with how we cope with these difficult times. And that includes people way beyond our congregation, folks in the society as a whole, whether it's in the grocery store or where we're interacting with people as we wear masks and gloves and seek to find our way in this sort of new reality that may become for the next little while the new normal, that we also give grace to those around us. We're more patient and more kind in the sense that we recognize that the challenges I'm feeling, the folks around me are also feeling. These are tough times for a lot of people, really in many ways struggling to wonder how are they going to feed their families and pay their bills. There are people all around us who are under a tremendous amount of stress. So the challenges that we feel, the difficulties that we're experiencing, are also, and in some cases more, in the lives of those around us. So while we give ourselves grace, our second G is to offer grace, convey grace to those that we interact with and in our broader society and congregation. The third G, moving from grace in its very beginning introduction, lends us to this third G, gratitude. I love the way this third verse follows right on the heels of giving grace and peace to the congregation in Philippi and to you and me, followed by, I thank my God every time I remember you, constantly praying with joy in every one of my prayers for all of you because of your sharing in the gospel from the first day until now. The word gratitude leaps out of these words. The sense of just sort of stopping, and in our social isolation, we really are forced to the memory of folks that we really care about and appreciate. Those in our immediate congregation and the friends that we can interact with on a regular basis like we're accustomed to, but also the communities that raised us, the people that gave us the sense of hope and purpose and life. Gratitude for those who made us who we are. I think of, again, Signal Mountain Baptist Church, and another one of my early heroes, Mike Willard, was the associate pastor who worked in partnership with my dad, as dad being pastor of Signal Mountain Baptist Church. Mike, for many years, was the associate pastor, and while I was in middle school and high school, Mike was my mentor and kind of oversaw the youth program that I was growing up in. And in many ways, Mike modeled a pastoral presence to me. My father, of course, was my pastor, but he also was my dad. And I was so thankful to have another mentor besides my father, Mike, who was a little younger than my dad, a little closer to my age, and also somebody who modeled beautifully the spirit of Christ to me and to our church through his life and his way of interacting with us. Mike was somebody who not only was a gentle and kind personality, but I'm grateful as I look back on the influence he had on my life. He demonstrated to me the importance of resiliency and courage in the midst of difficulty. Mike was an amazing person. He was a great athlete. He was a sparkling personality. He had a great positive spirit. He also had a significant disability where, as a child, he had had polio. So his right leg was quite withered, and he had a pronounced limp as he moved from one place to another. And yet he was a great athlete, and he played tennis and golf, and often for young people like me, he would whip us pretty solidly in tennis, and even play basketball and volleyball, and a lot of athletic encounters he had with those of us in middle school and high school, and demonstrated the fact that he was dealing with a significant disability, yet he never complained. He always had a positive, optimistic outlook. He always was affirming of us and caring for us. And so these people like Mike and like Lamar Sitton and the women and men of my childhood and middle school years and high school years, on through college and young adulthood, I look back on with a deep sense of gratitude. Like Paul, sort of now in these times of isolation, these memories come flooding back of, for you and for me, of people who nurtured us, cared for us, moved us forward, and coaches and teachers, folks that helped us learn more about life and develop skills that still today are playing a key role in helping us feel closer to a community of faith and closer to God. Paul was very much grateful for this congregation in Philippi. We, too, are grateful for this community of faith we share today. And while we miss one another, this third G, this great sense of gratitude that we can also be having grow among us, that while we wish so much we could be together, we also can be so thankful that we share in this community of faith. It is also vital right now that we be grateful, have this attitude of gratitude for the many people who right now are risking their health and in some cases even risking their lives for our benefits. We certainly know about the nurses and the doctors and the healthcare workers working on our behalf throughout our nation and throughout the world. Also the scientists and folks that are trying desperately to find better testing and vaccine for the coronavirus. People all across our world who are doing courageous things, people often we take for granted, like agricultural workers and farmers, many of whom have their livelihoods at risk right now, yet still are out in the fields planting and harvesting and helping to keep our grocery store shelves stocked. I think of grocery store clerks who are every day interacting with people like you and me who might actually be asymptomatic conveyors of COVID-19, and yet they every day are at their jobs allowing us to get groceries and maintain our healthy diets thanks to their good work. I think of ambulance workers and sanitation workers and folks that are considered to be essential pieces of the broader fabric of our society who are every day still at work, risking their health and their livelihoods on our behalf. I think of parents at home and so grateful that they have begun to figure out ways to nurture their children in place at home. I'm thankful for teachers who are trying heroically to figure out how to care for their children, and in many cases, through our public schools, continue to feed children who needed the food that the public schools were providing, and sometimes at their own expense, are helping our children in the broader society still maintain a semblance of a healthy lifestyle and a learning pattern that continues to be so important for their nurturing. I'm grateful for so many things, and it's in these times of isolation that many of us can glean and gain new insights and reminders of both grace to me and grace to you, and also this depth and breadth of gratitude for the many ways that we are nurtured and loved and moved forward in our faith because of those who've gone before us, because of those who surround us, and for those who are caring for us even now. The attitude of gratitude, this third G, and now the fourth G. It flows from gratitude, and this fourth G is simply the word goodness. This sense that moves now from Paul's sense of gratitude and his own insights from isolation, offering a blessing on the heels of the thanksgiving that he has and the prayers that he's sharing for these people he cares so deeply for, it is now this blessing of, and this is my prayer, that your love may overflow with knowledge and full insight, so that you will be prepared. And in fact, the wording here is key. It's such a beautiful way of that you may have this love overflowing with knowledge and full insight to help you determine what is best, so that in the day of Christ you may be pure and blameless, having produced a harvest of righteousness through Jesus Christ for the glory and praise of God. So here's the image that I have. Actually, it's two. The first is this fountain of water just overflowing the edges. This image of may your love overflow like a fountain with knowledge and full insight. What is the knowledge and full insight about our love? Well, it is our love is given to us not just for our own well-being. It certainly is to comfort us and give us a sense of fulfillment and gladness. But it's clear in the way this gratitude flows into goodness that the love that we get as an incredible gift from God, that love, while it overflows in abundance, is not for our own use, but it is to be passed on. It is this harvest of righteousness. I like to think in terms of the second image, the garden of goodness. This harvest of righteousness that's not harvested for my own benefit, but it is harvested to share with those around me. This harvest of righteousness from the goodness of God channeled through me in God's love, shared with the world, overflowing in knowledge and full insight, so that I'll know what is best, so I'll know what to choose, and my choice should be goodness. Many of us who are parents have this fervent wish for our children from the time that they're infants all the way until they become young adults and begin to have families of their own. And our fervent wish is that all of us generally say, I want so much for my children to be happy. Well, that's a worthy wish, but we can kind of hear from the consistent strains and flow of the biblical text, especially in passages like this, the wish for our children to be happy, for our friends to be happy, while seeming to be a good wish, is actually too superficial. It's not big enough. It's not substantive enough. The real wish that emerges out of this text in the first chapter of Philippians, consistently really throughout the entire New Testament, the wish really should not so much be for happiness as it should be for goodness. We want our children not just to be happy. We need our children to be good. We don't just need for our friends and for ourselves to be happy. We need for all of us to be good, to be a part of this garden of goodness that is God's gift to us through this overflowing love, that the knowledge that comes with God's love in us, this full insight, is in our insights from isolation to recognize the power of God's goodness and the need for us to, in our time, in this place, to ourselves be good, for a harvest of righteousness, a garden of goodness. Even with little things like the mask that we ought to be wearing when we go out in public. I felt really guilty the other day. I needed to go to the post office and deliver a package, and I decided to combine it with just taking a walk. And on my walk, it didn't occur to me to wear a mask, and I walked into the post office thinking nobody else would be there, only to realize our little post office in Avondale Estates was quite full of people. Everybody was socially distanced, and everybody was wearing a mask. And it occurred to me that we've been hearing from the CDC and lots of other places that wearing a mask is not so much for our own benefit, it's for the benefit of others. It is a gift we give. It's kind of a part of this garden of goodness where we think in terms of, if I happen to be an asymptomatic carrier of coronavirus, I don't want to give that to somebody else who might be more vulnerable than I am to this disease. Wearing a mask is a gift we give to our community. And I felt really guilty that I was the only one in that post office of about 15 other people not wearing a mask. And I realized that it wasn't that anyone said anything or gave me any kind of condemning looks, but I realized they were doing the right thing, and I was being maybe even a little irresponsible in not caring for them. It's the little things, this sense of recognition of my call, my need, the overflow of God's love in my life to be good and to do the right thing and to be a part of this harvest of righteousness that is caring and compassionate and kind. It is not only offering grace to other people, it's not only being grateful for the community that surrounds me and that I have been nurtured in, it is also the call to be good to those around me. Brothers and sisters, may our insights from our isolation with Paul in prison take on a whole new context of this glad sense that in spite of the difficulties, God is doing something good and right and important in me, in the midst of my isolation, in the midst of my loneliness, so that all of us eventually emerge out of this which too shall pass eventually, as better people, better conveyors of God's love, better able to participate fully in the broader garden of goodness that is God's. So, brothers and sisters, may you give yourself grace in this difficult time. May you also be conveyors of grace to those around you. May you be increasingly grateful for the incredible multiplicity of gifts that God has given to all of us. And may you be good. And may your goodness make a difference in our world, now and in the days to come. Thanks be to God for you and for the incredible gift of our community of faith. Let us continue to give thanks for the many heroes and recognize still that God holds us in the palms of his hands. Thanks be to God.